This is the MDT podcast.
A podcast for all healthcare professionals working with older adults. We are a multidisciplinary team educating about aging, MDT.
The MDT is brought to you by the Hearing Aid podcast team. We focus on a different topic each week to work with you to enhance your knowledge to help you look after older people. Hello and welcome to this episode of the MDT podcast. I am Jo Preston and I'm a consultant geriatrician at St George's Hospital in London.
I'm Ian Wilkinson, I'm a consultant geriatrician at Surrey and Sussex Healthcare in Redhill.
I'm Bernard, I'm a clinical fellow in dermatology and lymphedema at St George's Hospital.
So for this episode, which is mainly about skin in the lower legs, as with lots of dermatology, it's quite difficult to learn about this and visualise this without some pictures. So each episode we tell you about our show notes. This is definitely an episode that would be worth, if you're near a computer or you can pause this and look at a computer, is to download our show notes or have them up on a screen to look at the same time. We've got lots of images in there which have come from DermNet NZ, which is a New Zealand website, to illustrate the things that we're talking about as we go along. So that would be a really useful thing to do if you can. If not, have a look afterwards. You can also use the show notes for your CPD and you can do reflection through our website as well, and we'll send you a quick certificate. So, social media this week, what have you seen?
Yes, so this week, well, next week actually, is the 14th of March, and that is World Delirium Day.
Is it?
So that's my thing. I'll put the information for that on the show notes for this episode. But yeah, it's World Delirium Day, 14th of March next week.
So get the word out, people.
Yeah, and go back. If you don't know what delirium is, you're way behind.
I mean, where have you
been? Go back to the first series, episode 2, on delirium. Go have a listen.
So my theme of social media kind of links in a little bit to that, in that it's slightly on a delirium theme, but not specifically. It was from a blog in the BGS by a nurse called Rick Strang, who was an emergency care improvement lead at the Isle of Wight NHS. And they created this thing called the Blue Ribbon Patient, Do Not Transfer. So it was a flag that they would identify in ED, and it kind of came originally out of sort of end-of-life patients, saying these people are identified with people who shouldn't move in the middle of the night. So when there are bed pressures from ED to move people out of acute assessment areas and into wards, that highlighting early on, these are patients who should not be moved overnight. So people with delirium are some of those patients that you make things worse by moving them, so to identify other people who might be able to go. And it's quite nice the way that this came about. He says, Lucy, our end-of-life care nurse facilitator, dropped into ED one morning after a particularly difficult night. She had a pretty obvious enough now demeanour about her, which is quite good. They've extrapolated that to be for any patients that are vulnerable. So I quite like that idea.
That's really nice. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Anything like that before?
Yeah, that's good, actually. I'd also just reference people to, there was a really nice, a few nice articles in Age and Ageing, going back in January, actually, but on delirium and different assessment tools in the emergency department and out in the community, and also a bit about whether or not haloperidol could be used as a preventative treatment. Heads up, no.
It's a short article.
Yeah. Coming up in this episode, we have some of the common causes of red legs and how they might be managed, and some of the causes of swollen legs, including lymphedema. How to recognise when red legs are not cellulitis, and
very
to appreciate
important.
Yes, and that we're going to talk a bit about the accuracy of diagnosis in red legs and swollen legs is both important, and that these presentations are potential opportunities for advice on preventative care to try and minimise recurrence. Let's start with cellulitis.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's your approach?
Tips. Yes.
What's my approach? So it is taking a history. It is having a thorough examination. So from a history perspective, focusing on fevers, any rigors, any signs of sepsis to consider.
We're looking for a relatively rapid, progressive development of the erythema or the redness,
yeah,
aren't we?
Any history of lymphedema or leg swelling, because that can predispose you to a cellulitic episode. Any history of cellulitis themselves that required antibiotics, and things like diabetes or immunosuppression for one reason or another.
And then, Jo, where do you go looking? Because there's often a start to a cellulitis, isn't there?
So you want to check for if there's any sign of any skin breaks anywhere on the skin. So have they knocked it somewhere, and that's where a pathogen that was sitting on the outside of the skin or in their environment has gained entry and is causing then that infection around there. Having a look in between their toes and examining their feet is really important, seeing if there's any skin breaks there through dry skin or through fungal infections. That kind of thing is really important, because unless you treat that, and I'm going to send you back to the foot health episode that we did a few series ago now. Mm-hmm. That's really important, and managing that might be the thing that stops them getting another cellulitis in the future.
And the key, as we've just talked about that, for the dry skin is emollients, and picking the best emollient for the person that you're managing, be that a cream or a lotion or an ointment, depending on what they need.
So if they're having more than two episodes of cellulitis in a year, then you might want to think about an antibiotic prophylaxis for that person. It's not something we see very often, is it?
No, it's quite a relatively new sort of research, sort of evidence-based practice that we're doing. But the evidence suggests that if there is more than two episodes of cellulitis, it may be worthwhile considering a low-dose prophylaxis, usually in the form of penicillin V.
And you would talk to your local microbiologist about that to find out what their kind of local protocol is, or what the local sort of bug sensitivities are to work that out.
Mm. Yeah.
The MDT Podcast.
So I'm here with Dr. Slater, who's a dermatologist here at East Surrey Hospital. And we're going to just run through some of the things we've just talked about in this section of the podcast. So we've been talking about red legs, and we've been talking about cellulitis, and how in some patients there's a debate about longer term antibiotics or prophylactic antibiotics if people have had recurrent cellulitis.
Sure.
Is that something that you've used in your experience?
I think it is. I think you need to be very careful that we're getting the diagnosis right. I think that's very important, really. There's a number of different conditions that can cause redness of the legs. And I think it's important as a first step to make sure that we're making an accurate diagnosis of cellulitis. Commonly, we see conditions such as venous eczema or varicose eczema, which is easily sometimes confused with cellulitis and clearly requires different treatment to cellulitis. So I think it's important to make an accurate diagnosis would be the first step, really. So assessing a patient's red legs, we'd be looking at, is the history very acute like a cellulitis? Is there obvious, well-demarcated swelling that's come on abruptly? Is the patient unwell is a key figure, really. So by the letter of the law, patients should be unwell with a high fever with cellulitis. Whereas a condition like venous or varicose eczema is more long-standing, but sometimes can be the equally red and scaly, and we tend to manage these patients more with elevation and topical steroids and general skin care, for example.
Yeah, lovely. And for patients that have had confirmed recurrent episodes of cellulitis, prophylactic antibiotics or a longer course, perhaps?
Yes. I mean, there was a very good study produced 3 or 4 years ago that looked at the use of prophylactic antibiotics for recurrent cellulitis.
So this was the PATCH study, which is published in the New England Journal of Medicine back in 2013. And it was a double-blind, randomised controlled trial involving patients with two or more episodes of cellulitis of the leg. And it was a multi-centre trial across the United Kingdom and Ireland. And they looked at patients who had had recurrent episodes of cellulitis, and there were 274 patients recruited. Then they looked at the time to the first recurrence of cellulitis in a group on penicillin and then a group on placebo. In the penicillin group, the time to first recurrence was 626 days versus 532 days in the placebo group. 22% of the patients in the penicillin group developed a cellulitis versus 37% of patients in the placebo group, giving you a p-value of 0.01. And that gave them the ability to calculate a number needed to treat, or the number needed to prevent one episode of cellulitis, and that was 5. They then went on and did a no intervention follow-up period, and there was no difference in that of then the ongoing rate of first recurrence, and that was 27% in both groups. And overall, participants in the penicillin group had fewer repeat episodes than those in the placebo group, and there was no significant between-group difference in the number of adverse events. So their conclusion was that in patients with recurrent cellulitis of the leg, penicillin was effective in preventing subsequent attacks during prophylaxis, but that the protective effect diminished progressively once the therapy was stopped. They then went on and did the second patch study, which is patch 2. By the way, I should say patch stands for prophylactic antibiotics for the treatment of cellulitis at home. And in the patch 2 study, these were mainly patients who'd only had one episode of cellulitis. It showed a similar reduction in the number of repeat episodes of cellulitis whilst they were taking the medication. However, unlike patch 1, in this trial, the protective effect continued after the medication had been stopped for around 6 months.
We certainly use that in patients that do have recurrent cellulitis that's been proved. The evidence is for using penicillin V on a lower dose you'd normally use as an antibiotic. So it's used 500 milligrams twice daily. And the evidence is that you should use it for 6 months. And it appears that the 6 month point is probably enough to make sure that the skin has recovered, not only from the cellulitis, but you have sometimes a fairly prolonged phase of inflammation afterwards that can sometimes lead to recurrent episodes.
When somebody's had that prolonged period of inflammation,
yeah.
Is there anything further that could be done?
There is, because the skin is still swollen, still edematous and still red. So generally we recommend certainly some elevation of the legs, some soothing moisturisers should be very helpful, try and cool the skin down. Just general care really, not too much washing of soap for example, just allowing the skin to just generally heal, which certainly takes a few weeks.
Okay. And then is there anything else that we can do if people have got long-term, maybe swollen legs, to try and reduce the incidence of further episodes of cellulitis, or breaches of the skin?
Yeah, very much so, very much so. There's usually a cause that people get cellulitis. So sometimes it can be from breaks in the skin. So if you have chronic patches of eczema, for example, we often find that people with eczema have more risk of getting skin infections because the barrier is broken. So the barrier of your skin is very resistant to a number of things, infection being one of them, others being waters, irritants, sunlight, bacteria. It's a very good barrier the way it's set up. And sometimes that can be broken in people that have chronic skin infections. For example, eczema, but also things like psoriasis is very important where the skin's broken. Some people have a chronic, for example, athlete's foot between the toes or tinea pedis, and that also can be a portal of entry for people to get cellulitis following chronic athlete's foot or tinea pedis.
And so in terms of trying to stop a recurrent infection, it's about good quality care of the skin, keeping it well moisturised.
Exactly right. It's having an inspection between your web spaces, make sure you're not carrying anything like athlete's foot, for example, that can be treated. Making sure that the skin is in good condition, it's not too dry, well moisturised, and treat any active conditions that are there. So if there is some eczema there, that ought to be managed. If there's some psoriasis there or some other inflammatory dermatosis, they should be managed to reduce the risk of the skin barrier being broken, leading to cellulitis.
The MDT podcast.
Now let's talk about swelling in the legs.
So one of the things that we really commonly see is in patients with fluid overload from heart failure can cause swelling in the legs. And sometimes if that's happened quite quickly, I've seen that can look quite red. I think because of that stretch that's happening in the skin. And then that can get misdiagnosed as cellulitis or a bilateral cellulitis when actually that's what's going on.
Tends to be bilateral.
Yeah,
tends absolutely. To be pitting and feels like fluid. So it's quite a soft pitting.
Yeah. And sometimes you can get a blister. Especially if it expands quite quickly, you can get a fluid blister. Yeah.
I see that quite often in my patients that have had surgery following hip fractures. They get quite a large amount of edema to the operated leg, and not uncommonly we see quite large, quite tense blisters, either distally or more proximally near the wound, that as you know, the edema gradually settles over the coming days and a couple of weeks, the blisters disappear.
But that's really important to recognise that, to prevent skin breakdown. You have to treat the underlying edema that's there. And so if that's because of heart failure, then actually diuresis as well as good wound care is key there, really, to get the legs back into normal shape.
And the other soft pitting edema is dependent edema.
Which is a bit more difficult to treat, especially in your patients that are immobile, chair-bound or bed-bound.
Tend to find it doesn't come quite as far up the legs often.
It's just over areas that they are where gravity is most affecting it. So if they're sitting in the chair, you're going to get it most in the ankles. If they're resting in bed, buttocks, sacral area.
the general school of thought has been to elevate legs to reduce this.
So the main thing is, ideally, they sleep in bed, so they're dependent. Because when your legs are at the same level as your heart, that's when the fluid will drain, and that's when your lymphatics will help kick in and help drain the the accumulation of fluid. I mean, sitting with footrests, that's ideal if you're going to be sitting out in a chair. But I think finding a footrest on the ward is almost like gold dust.
And actually, I think it can be quite restrictive.
Yeah.
To have, especially when in a hospital, at least, when you're trying to get people up on their feet and rehabilitating, that can sometimes get in the way of their rehabilitation. Yeah. So it's a fine line you have
it
to
is.
Balance there. The low protein itself can be a cause of leg swelling, but typically when that happens, it involves all of the extremities, so including the upper limbs and sometimes the face too. So this can be seen in severe malnutrition and particularly sometimes in critical illness, but also in something called nephrotic syndrome, which is quite a serious condition. And it's really, really useful in that to check the urine dip for protein, because you'll get a lot of protein loss from the kidneys. So it's predominantly a kidney issue. So that's a quick way to check for that. You can do more detailed urine tests as well. Some medications can cause swollen legs as well. So particularly calcium channel blockers, things like amlodipine can cause swelling legs.
My least favourite drug combination. 10 of amlodipine and 20 of furosemide. Someone that's on a combination of a calcium channel blocker and furosemide, for me, always signals
a prescribing cascade.
Well, maybe a prescribing cascade, but a trigger to really think about the medications that they're on and logically just think through how that combination's come about. And is that a combination that's needed, or maybe could you manage people in a different way, especially if the edema is coming from calcium channel blocker, you may not need the diuretic.
Mm.
Lymphedema is a condition affecting the lymphatic system of the body, which is a network of channels and glands which can help fight infection and remove excess fluid.
And lymphedema can be primary, so due to a problem in the development of the lymphatic system. Usually that presents in early adult at the latest, or it can be secondary. And secondary causes are usually due to damage of the lymphatic system. So that might be following lymph node surgery or radiotherapy treatment for cancers. So it's important to ask if anyone's had a malignancy in the past.
Severe cellulitis can cause scarring of the lymphatic system and lead to a more chronic problem.
Inflammatory conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis or eczema, for the same reason really, that kind of acute inflammation that causes damage to the lymphatic system.
And quite commonly venous disease, which might include deep vein thrombosis or varicosed veins.
And the way that it causes that is that abnormal or damaged veins cause overflow of fluid from the veins into the tissue spaces in the legs. And because the lymphatic system is involved in getting some of that fluid back up, it overwhelms and eventually exhausts the lymphatic system involved. So it's then, in the future, unable to process all of that fluid that's there, and it becomes static in the legs.
The mainstay of treatment for that is compression.
You'd always need to do Dopplers before applying compression bandaging, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So make sure we need to exclude arterial insufficiency, and that's usually done through a duplex scan or an ABPI, depends which one you have available, usually managed in the community. So we don't see it often in hospital.
Yeah, quite often district nurses will manage this quite well, won't they?
Because often in hospital, I don't know about your experiences, my experiences is there's no one in hospital that can do compression bandaging.
Yeah.
The other thing is more recognized now, something called lipodema, which is an abnormal accumulation of fat that tends to be in the legs. I haven't seen it much in the elderly population.
No, I haven't.
But as the aging, as the population ages, there are cases that are surfacing up. I'm sure.
And one thing to think about if you've got quite marked bilateral edema that you don't think is due to heart failure or low albumin and things like that is to have a think in the history about whether there could be anything in their abdomen or their pelvis that could be causing compression that is then reducing the flow back up the legs.
Yeah.
In. So sometimes people might need a pelvic scan to have a look and see. So particularly a lymphedema, that could be part of the workup, wouldn't it? To make sure there isn't anything blocking the flow of that fluid or the lymphatics back up.
Yeah.
When seeing patients with single red legs, one of the things to think about and to explore a little in the history is whether or not there's a possibility of this being a DVT, which is a clot within the deep vessels, which lead to an engorgement of the leg with venous blood, because the return of the venous blood is impaired, and so you get a warm red leg with distension of the peripheral veins. So often you can see the veins in the lower part of the leg. It's often quite painful, mm-hmm. and diagnosed with an ultrasound scan of the venous system.
Yeah, people with DVT shouldn't have any signs of infection or sepsis like you would with cellulitis. That's one way to differentiate. There are some blood tests that can help. There are also specific risk factors that you would ask about for DVT, so things like having a malignancy, recent immobility, being on certain medications.
Being on a flight, taking the oral contraceptive pill, less likely in our
patient
group.
Are doing.
And having a hereditary predisposition and also having had a DVT before can cause damage to the blood vessel, making it more likely to reoccur. So we've covered some of the causes of swollen and mm-hmm. red lower legs.
Yeah.
All that information is contained on our show notes with loads and loads of pictures.
Yes.
Dermatology is something that often needs pictures, and we've got lots of pictures on the website.
Yeah.
The MDT Podcast.
So now it's time for the MDT teaser.
It
which is.
Which is
our catchily titled MDT item guessing game.
Yes.
So it's the third time we've run this one, Jo.
Yes.
You're clear with the rules now?
I'm going to say yes.
Yes, good. Right. So this time you can go first. And so this is based on a catchphrase. And Jo, you can describe your catchphrase first.
Okay. So in the first part of this picture...
Yes, it is a picture, yes.
The first part of this picture, there are curtains on either side of the periphery.
Yep.
You can see a pole. You can see a person mid-air.
Yep.
You can see a blue sheet around them.
Okay.
They appear to be moving mid-air. I have no other clues.
That's it.
Sorry, I thought you'd get it by now.
Sorry, I was waiting. So we've got someone flying in mid-air, like a Superman type, like a superhero.
That's a really great way to think about this thing, yeah.
Yes. So is it like a... is it a geriatrician coming in, flying in to save the day? Like the old person whisperer?
It is not.
No.
It's hoist transfers. I like how you see that person flying through the air.
Yes, clever.
That's a much more fun way to think of hoist transfers.
Like that. Okay, hoist transfers. Okay, your one.
Okay.
I'm not confident on your ability, on my ability to describe this for you to get this. Okay, so our patient T is in a bed. There is a senior doctor at the end of the bed with a nurse and a range of junior doctors.
Ward round.
They are looking at a folded piece of paper. One of the junior doctors then hands the senior doctor a scalpel. They use it on the piece of paper.
It's a pen. A pharmacological debridement.
Yes.
Yes.
Good. The geriatrician's scalpel. Yes. And that was a phrase coined by...
I don't know.
I think it was by James Fisher from the Academy of Older Medical Education.
AEME.
AEME.
Yeah, they're very good. You should check out some of their... They've got lots of educational resources, some podcasts, some mini gems, which are little YouTube videos, sort of 7 minutes long on lots of common things. And they also run some Geriatrics for Juniors conferences, which are not just
excellent.
For junior doctors.
Yeah.
But yeah, so definitely look them up and go to, read and listen to anything they've done.
And the MD Teaser for you is on Twitter. And our Twitter hashtag is MD Teaser. And our Twitter account is at...
MDT_podcast.
Or we're on Facebook.
.com/MDTpodcast.
If you check out our Twitter feed, the MD Teaser clue will be pinned to the top of our feed and the winners will be on our website.
And you can win an MDT mug. Now, finally, our new feature...
Called The Gallery,
which is a piece of art, essentially. So this time I have for you a picture, which you will, again, we'll put on Twitter and we will put on our website. And it's a picture of a face, and it's this picture of this older woman and all the beautiful lines in her face that have come with age. And the beauty of etching, for anyone that isn't too familiar with it, is that the picture is generated by creating grooves and lines within a piece of metal. And that's done using a material and then some acid. It actually carves lines into this piece of metal, and then ink is put on top and then transferred to an image. So I thought there was something really beautiful about portraying this woman's face through etching. There's something very physical about it that is really portrayed in this image. It's done with kind of some brown ink, and it's really thoughtful. It's an etching by an artist called Freya Payne, which is called Who Then Will Answer? And it was displayed at the Royal Academy of Arts in London, which is a really nice gallery if you're around that area with a bit of time on your hands. Go in, it's free. So that's it for this episode. The MDT will reconvene in 2 weeks' time.
Dr. Wilkinson has previously received funding from Astellas and UCB Pharmaceuticals for delivering educational activities. The MDT podcast is a hearing aid podcast's Big Things Media production. Additional music by Kevin MacLeod. This podcast has been made possible from a technology-enhanced learning grant from Health Education England, spreading education throughout Kent, Surrey and Sussex. For more information, visit thehearingaidpodcasts.org.uk.